Number two was Brittany Fletcher. And number one was Selena Wilkins.
There was a mumbling of confusion. Everyone knew who Chad was, but the other two weren't prominent warriors, though Vince and Alex felt a bit better in knowing the girl who'd taken them out was the best on the field.
As for survivors, number three was Tiffany Hunt. Number two was Shane DeSoto. As for number one, well, she was the only person to make it on both lists. Brittany Fletcher.
Nick noticed the girl who'd taken out himself and Alice blushing slightly. Well, at least he knew the invisible girl's name now.
I'm sure some of you are looking up and down the combat row trying to place the names other than Shane and Chad,
Coach George said to the assembled class.
Well, you'd better turn your heads to the left side of the gym, because that's where you'll find them. You see, those people who captured the top spots in both categories, they're in alternative training, and they kicked 90% of your asses.
Coach Persephone took a step forward. There is perception among many that heroes specializing in combat are the best. That's true, in that they are the best at combat. Keep in mind, though, that few criminals are so thoughtful as to arrange a bare-knuckle brawl in a secluded location where you can prove to them your superiority. More often than not, skills like stealth, planning, and improvisation are far more useful. To those of you on the combat side of the room, most of you were likely hoping to end up in this training course. You feel it's the better option, and in certain cases, you're correct. Don't forget this lesson, though. Just because someone is physically weaker than you doesn't mean they aren't a very real threat. You're dismissed for today. We'll see you in class tomorrow. The lines broke as students began scattering in their own directions. Vince began crossing the gym to thank Camille, but his arm was grabbed halfway there.
Reynolds,
Coach George said, holding him in place.
You need to come by my office sometime before gym tomorrow.
For what? Vince asked.
Let's call it part of your probationary requirement for half-assing it with your power,
Coach George told him. George released Vince's arm, and the silver-haired youth headed off in his original direction. Unfortunately, Camille had vanished during the brief discussion. Vince knew what she looked like now, at least, so he was confident he could thank her next time. Vince headed off to the changing room, wondering what requirement Coach George was going to give him. Since the last time a subject had taken him down this path had resulted in he and his friends being stuck on a mountain, he was understandably concerned. Still, it couldn't be that bad, could it?
Hey, man, what's with the long face?
Nick asked as he emerged from the locker area in his above-ground clothes.
Nothing, Vince said, shaking off his concern. So what are we doing with our last day of pre-class freedom?
Cocaine and strippers, Nick replied. Vince simply raised an eyebrow in response.
Fine, fine. We'll think of something else. Let's go rally the troops, Buzzkill.
Vince nodded his agreement, and the two set off to actively waste some time. 75. Vince knocked hesitantly on Coach George's office door. It was during his visiting hours, so he should be there, but Vince still felt a bit out of place. Nick was organizing a putt-putt outing for the group to do on its last day of break, but it would be another few hours before they departed, and Vince had ultimately decided he would rather find out what Coach George wanted now rather than put it off for a day.
Come in,
Coach George hollered from the other side. Vince turned the handle and walked in, taking in a more comprehensive view of the small office than last time.
There were various degrees along the walls, as well as a multitude of pictures. Some were very old, but many seemed recent. The contents of these photographs were completely varied, with no common theme or person spanning them all. The actual desk took up a significant portion of the room, and it was literally covered in papers. Vince wasn't sure how anyone could find anything in that enormous sprawl of pages. Sitting atop that mess, though, was something even more surprising. A car battery.
"Reynolds, glad you made it early," Coach George said from behind the desk. "Take a seat."
Okay, Vince said uncertainly. "Why did you want to see me?"
"Because I'm adding something to your diet," Coach George told him.
"I'm not sure I understand."
"You keep yourself stocked with a little fire by draining lighters, right?"
Coach George asked. "Yes, sir."
"Well, I saw what you did during the midterm, when you drained your weapon and blasted Castillo with electricity. That was impressive."
"Thank you," Vince said, struggling for a moment to figure out who Castillo was before remembering that was Thomas's last name.
"So impressive, in fact, that I decided you need to add it to your training regiment,"
Coach George continued.
"Hence, I brought you a snack."
He patted the car battery. "You want me to drain the battery? But I already keep some fire in reserve," Vince said.
"So you can't hold more than one form of energy at a time?"
Coach George asked. "No, I can hold as many as I want. At least, that's been my experience so far. I was referring to the talk we had last semester, about me not wanting to have too much in case I lost control," Vince explained.
"Listen, Reynolds, I'm more than meeting you halfway here. I'm cutting you more slack than I've given anyone in a very long time. I'm still your teacher, though, and I would be remiss in my duties if I let you get by without mastering all the weapons at your disposal. So here's the deal. You're going to keep up your fire reserves, and in addition, you're going to drain this car battery every day before class. But, and before you object, let me make this clear. I'm not making a request. You're going into combat training. That means you're going to learn how to fight with both types of energy,"
Coach George finished, cutting Vince off. Vince took a deep breath and considered the situation. A car battery wasn't all that much power in the grand scheme of things, but then again, with electricity, a little went a long way. Still, it could be manageable with the right precautions. "I have to drain it every day before class. If I have any left over when Jim is finished, do I have to keep it with me?" Vince asked.
"I don't care what you do after," Coach George told him. "As long as you start my class each day with a full battery's worth of power, you can discharge the rest down here when we're done."
Vince nodded. "I can work with that."
"So glad to hear it," Coach George said. "Now get out of here, kid. I've got work to do."
Vince scrambled up and headed out the door. He made his way to the lifts, thankful he'd faced his problem today instead of waiting and worrying. It hadn't been nearly as bad as he'd expected. He just had to start using another type of energy. In fighting. Which he would apparently be doing every day there was class. As the lift began to rise, Vince felt his stomach begin to drop.
"Your move," Mary said, setting her pawn down.
Nick was rounding up people for putt-putt. Vince had gone to see Coach George about something. Alice was getting herself dolled up. And Herschel had gone to get lunch, leaving her the perfect opportunity for a match with Mr. Numbers. "Indeed it is," he said, quickly analyzing the board.
"I find it interesting that you wish to continue these games,
even after our disagreement over the mountain test.
He moved his knight.
We have the same objective. We're just going after it in different ways. I disagreed with your methods, not the results,
Mary said, positioning her rook.
I see. And do you feel our tactic has borne fruit?
Everyone is a little bit closer after the experience, I'll give you that. Not to mention, for the first time, Alice got to see how her power can be useful, even life-saving,
Mary said.
Ah, yes. Is that why you claimed you had trouble lifting people with your gift?
Mr. Numbers asked. Mary blinked in surprise.
That was true, she told him.
Then what about when you plucked the fit version of Mr. Daniels off the ground and held him restrained in mid-air while threatening him?
Mr. Numbers pointed out, shifting his knight once more.
Roy is incredibly resistant to damage. That means I can hold him in the air indefinitely and not worry about crushing him. Other people aren't quite as durable,
Mary replied. It was Mr. Numbers's turn to be surprised. He'd assumed she was lying in order to elevate Alice's need and usefulness within the group. He had been wrong, though. She truly did possess that limitation. He mentally adjusted several calculations, then turned his focus back to the game.
So, the mountain was a success, then, he said.
It bonded us, yes. It also made the stronger of us realize our limitations, which is somewhat counterproductive to my work with Vince, Nick, and Alice,
Mary informed him, moving another pawn.
Such endeavors must invariably suffer small setbacks on occasion,
Mr. Numbers commented.
Agreed, but let's try to keep those to a minimum in the future. It will be better for everyone, especially Mr. Transport.
Mary chuckled.
What do you mean?
Ask him about when he went to pick up Herschel. I'll let him explain the rest,
Mary said, a small grin still stuck to her face.
I will,
Mr. Numbers agreed. He took the game in three more moves.
76. The next day was a hectic one. Book bags were packed, breakfasts were scarfed, and new classes were attended. The time above ground passed more or less the same for everyone, getting the syllabi for their new courses and hurriedly finding the locations of their classrooms. There were lectures on attendance requirements and expectations for the year, but they may as well have been monologues about ham versus bacon on Eggs Benedict for all the HCP students could tell. Each one was focused on the coming afternoon and the final hour of gym, when they would at last begin a new regimen of training. Alternative and combat alike were excited, scared, and awash with the curiosity for something new. The morning flew by. However, there was still one roadblock before the new classes in gym could begin.
"Welcome back, everyone,"
Dean Blaine greeted them as the freshmen wandered into his classroom.
"I hope you all had an enjoyable vacation."
There was a grumbling of answers that seemed to lean slightly toward the affirmative.
Glad to hear it.
As Nick took his usual seat near the middle row, he noticed something. The extraneous chairs appeared to be gone. He kept watch as the remaining ones filled up and confirmed his suspicions. There were exactly enough chairs for the current number of freshmen attending the class.
Now, as I'm sure some of you have noticed, we've scaled back the clutter of extra seats over the break,
Dean Blaine said once everyone was seated.
Took you long enough,
Stella called out.
"So pleasant to hear your voice again, Miss Hawkins,"
Dean Blaine said with his usual unwavering smile.
"I assure you, we had our reasons for waiting, as well as for removing them over break. Would anyone care to take a stab at what those might have been?"
Alice's hand shot up in the air as usual. Dean Blaine pointed at her out of habit, only doing so after realizing that her hand had in fact been up.
"You wanted us to look at the empty seats and be reminded that those were students like us who didn't cut it, and to remind us that if we didn't do our best, our seat could be empty too."
"Very good, Miss Adair. So why did we remove them?"
Because we're starting a new semester, so you wanted the empty chairs to be fresh examples?"
"Not quite, no. Anyone else?"
Dean Blaine asked. This time, a black-haired boy with a thin goatee raised his hand.
"Mr. Weaver,"
Dean Blaine said, pointing at him.
"You took the chairs away because you're finished cutting people with that system,"
he said.
"Correct, Mr. Weaver. All of which leads us into what I'd like to talk with you all about today. I think it's time we discussed how the remainder of the Hero Certification Program will work, as far as continuation and admittance,"
Dean Blaine said.
"Admittance? We're already in the program,"
Stella pointed out.
"You're in this year's program, yes. I'm talking about the years to follow, though,"
Dean Blaine told her. There was a ripple of stillness as the implications of his phrase settled in the minds of the class.
"Allow me to clarify before anyone asks further questions on the topic,"
Dean Blaine said. Years of giving this speech had left him well prepared to avoid the tidal wave of panicked queries that would strike if he didn't take charge.
"Each year we take a small number of promising supers and admit them to the freshman course of the program, the one you are all currently enrolled in. The first semester of that time is used to trim the fat in multiple ways, both by beginning the basic necessary physical conditioning and eliminating those who lack the qualities to move onward. The second semester is spent continuing to lay the groundwork for continuing in the program, giving you training a bit more specialized to your particular talents. Near the finale of the second semester, we hold another battle session to assess your combat abilities, as well as looking at your other skills through various tests to see how much you have grown and how much further we think you can grow. At the end of this year, you all have the option of applying for the next year's program. I should caution you, however, there are only 28 spots available."
A few of the mentally swifter students reached the conclusion first, but it was, of course, Stella who voiced it.
"So three of us will be gone?"
"Correct," Dean Blaine confirmed. "While you are, of course, welcome and encouraged to continue pursuing a degree at Lander, you will no longer be part of the Hero Certification Program. I should tell you that, generally speaking, we have cut the class down to much fewer than 31 by now, so feel proud that you are part of such a talented group."
Vince raised his hand hesitantly.
"I believe I said no questions, Mr. Reynolds. However, since I just took one from Miss Hawkins, I will make one more exception for fairness before I expect that rule to be followed once again,"
Dean Blaine said.
"Thank you, sir. I was just wondering, if it's usually a lot lower than this, and there are 28 spots, does that mean the sophomore year generally has unfilled spots?"
Vince asked.
"An astute and fair question, and actually my next point,"
Dean Blaine replied.
"No, the classes are always filled, and many are turned away. Let us say, hypothetically, of course, that you don't make the cut this year and are removed from the program, Mr. Reynolds. In the duration of next year, you work hard and improve your abilities. When the year's end comes around, you apply for the sophomore training once more. You are tested, measured, and found to be one of the 28 most deserving candidates. You would then be accepted and placed into the next year's course.
Wait a second. You mean we're not just competing with ourselves? We're competing with everyone who ever completed their freshman year in the HCP and wants back in?
Stella asked.
I'm going to choose to interpret that as a statement rather than a question, since I feel I've been quite clear about my negative feelings toward those right now,
Dean Blaine said stonily.
That would be a correct summation of the situation, though. You should also note that the 28 spot limitation is only for the sophomore year.
The class relaxed a little bit. It was scary to have to jump through another hoop, but if it was only one time, they each felt like they could make the cut.
Junior year, we only accept 20 students. And senior year, it will be a paltry 15,
Dean Blaine continued.
Of course, the process will be the same each time, as will the existence of an outside pool of competition. And I suppose I should mention that of the 15 accepted senior year, only 10 will graduate and become fully licensed heroes. You may now ask any additional questions you may have.
Why limit the number of heroes out there?
Alex asked immediately.
Because heroes must be the best. They are tasked with dealing with supers, powers, and all manner of natural disasters, along with everyday problems. Just completing the course isn't enough. You have to prove you're better than everyone else. Because you'll have to be,
Dean Blaine explained.
What if there are more than 10 capable supers in the senior year class? One or two who would make awesome heroes and are just below the cutoff point?
Gilbert tossed out.
They are welcome to apply for the year once more and try again. Perhaps with another year of training, they will rise in standing and make it out. If not, though, well, then they weren't the best, were they?
Dean Blaine queried back at him. The class lapsed into a stunned silence, taking in everything that Dean Blaine had explained to them, and trying to mentally assess their current standing.
The ultimate thing to remember here is to work hard, try your best, and never forget that just getting by is not an option for students who want to be trusted with the lives of the weak and innocent,
Dean Blaine advised them.
I know this system seems harsh, because it is. When heroes fail, people die. That isn't a responsibility that can be trusted to just anyone. Keep that firmly in mind as you learn this semester, and I'm sure you'll find the gumption to push yourself just that little bit harder.
77.
Rule number one is that you're stronger than you think you are, Coach Persephone said as she walked down the line of students before her. The 2 hours of conditioning were over, and they had finally arrived at a more specialized training. She was handling her kids in the regular gym, while George had taken his down a floor to a combat field. The faces staring back at her were uncertain and timid. She knew these expressions well. Every year, she was surrounded with the same looks on different faces. It was an arrangement of features that told the familiar story of someone who was powerful, yet mortal, a super who had to fear the mundane. She knew these expressions very well. She'd seen one in the mirror all her childhood, after all. And she took a particular joy in wiping them off any student in her charge. That isn't just pretty talk, either. I'm not encouraging you or trying to build your self-esteem. I'm being literal. Each of you is more powerful than you believe. Alice Adair, for example, can fly. Now, how useful would you rate that skill in combat, Mr. Weaver?
Not very,
said Rich, body language solid, but voice hesitant.
You'd be right much of the time, Coach Persephone agreed. In circumstances where battle is taking place in an elevated location, or the enemy has the high ground, or even mid-air, though, you would be very incorrect. The ability to move freely through the air is a very rare talent among supers, and one that has turned the tide of many battles. What about Tiffany Hunt's ability to create illusions? Any thoughts on its battle-worthiness, Mr. Murray?
Well, Will began thoughtfully. Normally, no, it wouldn't be useful in a one-on-one battle. However, if it were able to alter the opponent's perception of their environment, it could be downright deadly, if used properly.
Mr. Murray has hit upon the magic phrase, Coach Persephone praised, and that is, if used properly. You see, none of you are a tremendous threat in a regular fist fight. But we don't deal with those situations. We deal with criminals and villains that are clever as well as powerful. Being a hero very rarely boils down to something as simple as a fist fight. So while you are under my care, it is important that you understand the purpose of this course. I'm not trying to teach you how to fight like the students in the combat course. I'm teaching you how to find the right scenarios where you are deadly, and then how to orchestrate them in a field of battle. She paused for a moment, seeming to collect her thoughts. In reality, she had given this speech many times, and found a small break here drove home her next words well.
To put it more concisely, Coach George is turning your fellow classmates into tanks. But as for me, I'm building snipers.
Rule number one is that you're weaker than you think you are,
Coach George said, pacing the line with a half-snarl plastered to his face. He knew all too well the faces that stood before him in the sparse, concrete combat area under the glaring fluorescent lights. They were the same cocky stares that met him every year at this time. These were the kids who grew up unstoppable. They didn't understand fear or insecurity. Sure, some of them knew what the words meant, but they didn't know the horror of wondering if you'll be able to walk out of a bad situation alive. They weren't picked on or made to eat dirt, though plenty of them had done the picking. These were the expressions of arrogant idiots who'd never known what it was to really lose. George had worn one himself for longer than he cared to admit, and he took a special joy in smashing it off the face of any student in his care.
I know you all grew up powerful. The baddest-ass kid on the block, Coach George continued. I'll bet, with the exception of you who had supers for teachers, none of you has even lost a fight before Lander. Hope you enjoyed it, kids, because that ride of luxury stopped the minute you stepped into my gym. This course is designed to show you just how weak you really are, so that I can teach you how to be strong. Reynolds, punch Castillo in the mouth.
What? Vince asked, making no move to strike Thomas, who was standing next to him. Why would I do that?
Wrong answer, Reynolds. 50 push-ups. Now!
Coach George ordered. Vince looked at him uncertainly, then got down to the floor and began his penance.
You see, this is not playtime. I'm not going to be teaching you how to fight with the intent of taking an opponent down for the count. Me giving an order should be met with instant obedience, because there will be times when that order will save the life of you or another. Foster, punch Griffin in the mouth.
Alex never even had a chance to react before Sasha's fist buried itself in his unsuspecting jaw. The impact knocked him to the ground.
Good job, Foster. The sound of flesh-on-flesh impact was the only acceptable answer there. Griffin, 50 push-ups,
Coach George said.
But you told her to hit me,
Alex pointed out from his prone position as he rubbed his jaw.
And if I'd told you not to dodge, then you'd get a good job, too. But you didn't duck a fist flying at your face. That shit doesn't float in combat training,
Coach George explained. Alex groaned, but he flipped over and began doing his own push-ups.
Now I'm sure at this moment, Persephone is giving her kids a pep talk about how to use their special talents to be better heroes. You lot don't have special talents, though. You only have the one. Kicking ass. Sure, it comes in different flavors, but at the end of the day, that's what it all boils down to. I'm going to tear you down and then build you up again. But this time, the right way,
Coach George declared. The gym was silent, save for the soft grunts of Vince and Alex still doing their push-ups. That was fine. George didn't have to hear the grumbles and the yeah rights to know they were there. Kids like these didn't take anyone's authority on words.
I know each of you is thinking that this speech doesn't apply to you. That you're the exception to the rule. A true warrior in every way. And that I don't know a damn thing about combat. I know, because I've been you. And I'm going to do with you what my coach did to us. I'm going to establish, right here and now, who the authority on the subject of winning fights is.
Coach George shrugged off the jacket of his uniform and cracked his knuckles for show.
Anyone who wants to see where they stack against the old-timer can step up now. One by one, I'll be glad to knock you down.
Smarter students of this age, ones who had been on the losing end of a few fights, might have suspected that Coach George wouldn't make an offer like this unless he was able to follow through on it. Unfortunately, for a large portion of the class, they didn't fall into that demographic, and as such, hadn't learned just how humiliating and devastating a loss can be. Yet. 78.
This is some kind of trick, right?
Roy asked, as the rest of the students stared uncertainly at Coach George.
Not at all, Daniels. This is part of the learning experience,
Coach George said.
What exactly are we supposed to learn? Sasha ventured to ask.
Respect. Not the kind that makes you say sir and ma'am. The kind that lets you trust implicitly that I know what I'm doing. This class will be far more lucrative for you if you all do as I tell you. When I tell you.
Of course we will. You're our teacher,
Jill assured him.
Some of you will, Coach George agreed. Some of you need to really know you should, though. Need to know it in a visceral way. A way that can only come by having the man you're learning from best you in a fight. I'm not condemning that fact. I'm acknowledging it for what it is, and getting it addressed right here and now. Nobody has to fight me, and there won't be punishment for anyone who does. Just ask yourself this simple question. Can you 100% trust the battle instructions of a teacher you haven't tested firsthand? If so, then fine. If not, then let's fix that problem.
There was a brief silence after Coach George finished, broken almost immediately by Roy's deep, confident voice.
Oh, I have so got dibs on first.
The first step is understanding exactly what it is your power does, Coach Persephone instructed her students. This is also the last step, because it is a step that never truly becomes accomplished. Trying to define the miraculous is a capital enterprise in futility. Still, we can improve our understanding, and from there, we gain strength.
Nick leaned over and whispered to Alice,
If I cough the words hippie bullshit, you think anyone will notice?
Shush!
Alice snapped at him.
Nick Campbell,
Coach Persephone said, without turning to face him.
Do you have a problem with my instructions?
Yeah, look, not to stir the pot or anything, but what about people like me? I mean, hell, I don't even know how my power works, let alone have a clue on how to understand it,
Nick told her, stepping forward from the line.
You manipulate probability,
Coach Persephone said.
Probability,
Nick said, grinning slightly.
That is somewhat abstract, I'll give you that. If you want my honest advice, though, and not just an opportunity to show the class how you can make a bad joke from a common word, I would tell you experimentation is the key,
Coach Persephone said.
Start trying to do things with your power you haven't done before. As you find things that work and things that don't, you will grow closer to understanding the mechanics behind your ability.
Ah, great idea. Thanks, Teach,
Nick said, retaking his place beside Alice.
Nick Campbell, walk over here right now,
Coach Persephone told him.
What'd I do? I asked the question,
Nick began protesting.
Just walk over here, young man, she reiterated.
Nick let out an exaggerated sigh and began slowly schlepping toward his teacher. It wasn't far, maybe 30 feet at the max, and yet he only made it halfway. Once there, Nick proceeded to jerk his head back, twitch slightly, and collapse onto the ground.
Anyone else?
Coach George asked. Scattered around him were the bruised and often unconscious figures of several freshman students, Roy, Stella, Michael, and Sasha among them. The ground in the area was now cracked, and in several places there were scorch marks burned into the surface. Most changed of all in the scenery, though, was Coach George himself. Coach George was a shifter, it seemed, one of the more common types of supers, especially of those who specialized in combat. Coach George was a bit extra special, though, for while shifters like Herschel turned into Roy, or the sophomore Ben had turned into a lizard man, Coach George turned into something different.
So, is he technically a robot or a cyborg?
Vince asked Jill, one of the evidently more intelligent students who had opted to decline Coach George's challenge.
You'd probably have to ask my brother on that one. I can't really connect with him the way I do other machines, though, so my money is for cyborg,
Jill replied. Coach George had shifted into a man of metal, but unlike Stella, he was a more functional model. His eyes seemed to act as scanners, and several times he had blasted a charging student with a weapon from his body. His favorites seemed to be the energy guns that came out of his forearms.
"It looks like we're done here, then,"
Coach George told them, turning back into his human form. His pants and shirt were ripped and singed in a few places, but the skin he showed had no injury of any kind.
"When we're done, someone go grab the healer girl to clean up in here. But first, I want to say something. Pay attention, those of you on the floor who can still hear. Today was an important lesson. It taught you what failure is, some of you for the first time. For others, it was one you've had before but could stand a little repeating. I meant what I said, though. I don't hold it against you that you needed to test my mettle. I did the same thing to my coach when I was in your spot, and my ass wound up on that same floor. So listen close, kiddos, because this is the part that matters. Today, I taught you how to lose, so that starting Monday, I can teach you how to win. Come ready to hurt and ready to learn. Class dismissed.
Well, that was pretty horrifying to watch,
Thomas said, walking over to Vince and Alex.
Agreed, Alex said. I say we hit the showers, go get dinner, and try very hard to forget what we're coming back to on Monday.
I'll catch up with you guys, Vince said. Somebody still needs to go get Camille.
I can do that. We're friends, after all,
Thomas volunteered. Vince waved him off. Don't worry about it. I still owe her a thanks from Halloween, anyway.
Very well,
Thomas said.
At least she should be free. It's not like anyone in the alternative training class will need healing.
If you're wondering why you can't move, it's because I've scrambled the receptors to your nervous system,
Coach Persephone explained to Nick's twitching, collapsed form.
I'm not targeting any of the automated parts, like heart and breathing, so you'll be fine when I stop. Although you might be a bit twitchy for a few hours.
How are you doing that?
Tiffany Hunt asked from the line.
As a child, I always seemed to be able to turn people's moods with ease. Eventually, it was diagnosed that I was a super, though at the time, we all believed I had a minor ability to influence people's minds. In an effort to understand my power, I did exactly what I told Nick here to do. I experimented with new things I'd never tried before. Most failed, but some didn't, and eventually I made a fascinating discovery,
Coach Persephone said, walking the rest of the way over to Nick and staring down at him.
I learned I didn't have power over the mind. I had the ability to, at will, create, emit, and direct pheromones of all types. At first, I was disappointed, thinking the mind power to be more useful. My time at Lander taught me otherwise, though. I learned there are all sorts of things that pheromones influence and control. Did you know there are even some that can disrupt the nervous system?
Nick made a slight gurgling sound from his place on the floor.
Your homework over the weekend is to try one new way to use your power. Failure or success is irrelevant. I only demand that you try.
Dismissed, Coach Persephone told them. With that, she turned and began heading toward the exit. Camille began moving toward Nick's pitiful form to administer some help, but the sound of her name being called in a familiar voice pulled her attention away rapidly.
"Hey, Camille!"
Vince yelled, jogging over from the entrance to the gym. Camille took very deep, very rapid, very unsuccessful steadying breaths. She'd known this was going to happen eventually. It was unavoidable. He was just the kind of guy who had to thank anyone who'd given him aid.
Coach George sent me up here, Vince explained once he reached her. He did kind of a number on our combat class, and a lot of the guys could use some healing. Do you mind?
Camille shook her head no, and began to hurry past him toward where she was needed, but he stepped in front of her before she made it.
One more thing. I just wanted to say thank you for helping me on Halloween. You guys really pulled me out of a tight spot there, and I don't know what I would have done without you. So thank you. A lot.
No problem,
Camille squeaked, flushing bright red and bustling past him toward the door. To her credit, she didn't break into a full-on sprint until she was out of the gym and on her way to the lower floor. Her heart was racing, and her breathing was more erratic than a drunken bull runner's, but she slowly got both back under control. It looked like he didn't remember. and she wasn't sure how she felt about that. It made things easier, though, and that was something. Upstairs, Vince was quite uncertain how, but he had a strange feeling he'd offended the girl he meant to thank. Added on to the tingle in his brain that there was something familiar about her, Vince had no idea what to make of the small female. Instead, he wandered over to the circle of fellow students, watching with amusement, as Nick slowly regained control of his limbs. 79.
How you feeling, buddy? Vince asked, handing Nick a glass of water. They were back in Melbrook, lounging in the common room with Alice, Mary, and Herschel. It had taken Nick 20 minutes before he could effectively coordinate his movements, and even then, he'd needed help making it to the dorm.
Glitchy,
Nick replied, sipping the water carefully.
That woman is a nutjob. Who just attacks a student on the first day?
Coach George attacked around 8, but they sort of volunteered for it, Herschel commented.
Roy had shifted back not long after being healed, happy to fade away after another trouncing. He wasn't used to losing, especially not this often.
Volunteered is the key word there. I just asked a simple question, Nick said.
You were being an asinine smartass, no surprise, Alice corrected. Just be glad I don't have her power.
At this particular moment, I'm more wishing no one had her power, Nick replied. Let's just grab some dinner, rent some movies, and spend the rest of the night relaxing.
Actually, if you guys are interested, I was sort of planning to go out tonight,
Herschel said tentatively. Well, yeah, we assumed Roy would be on the prowl, Vince said.
No, I mean me. Herschel. I want to go to a club tonight.
There was a soft creak of bones as everyone shifted their bodies to gaze at the chair where Herschel was lounging.
But you don't go out, Vince ventured.
I don't, because Roy does, and it keeps things much more amiable between us if I give him the weekends. Tonight, though, he isn't feeling like his usual partying self due to Coach George's smackdown. So I thought it was a good opportunity to make use of a Friday while I have one, Herschel explained. Like I said at the party, I don't want all of my college experiences to be second-hand.
I'm in, Nick nearly shouted.
You just had your nervous system rewired an hour ago,
Mary told him.
And I'm feeling much better, Nick said. Herschel on the dance floor, though? No way in hell am I missing this.
Guess that means I'm in, too, Vince said.
You want to see Herschel bust a move, too?
Alice asked. No, I just don't trust Nick not to try and set him up in some sort of elaborate and embarrassing situation, Vince said.
Good call, Nick agreed.
I'll be fine, Herschel told him. I would love it if you guys came, though. Alex is already in, and I figured we could invite everyone else as well.
I'm certainly not going to stay home by myself, Alice said,
a small chime of happiness echoing through her at being able to truthfully make such a statement.
I'll call Sasha and Will, Vince volunteered.
What about you, Mary?
Herschel tried to ask nonchalantly. Mary waited a moment, savoring the uncertainty as only a girl being courted for the first time is able to do, then let out her answer in a small, reserved voice.
I think that sounds like fun.
Awesome,
Herschel said, a wide grin breaking through his face's futile restraint attempts.
No, 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 no. Oh, dear Lord in heaven, no. No, no, maybe, no.
Alice paused to take a breath and moved to another area of Mary's closet. Mary had, much to her almost immediate regret, asked for Alice's input on what to wear out to the club. What she had expected would be a 2-minute process to confirm an outfit had turned into an endless critique of Mary's entire wardrobe.
"I thought the yellow shirt looked nice,"
Mary ventured.
"Nice is for church, class, and dinner with the family," Alice told her. "Going out to the club is about grabbing attention and keeping it there." "That's not really how I like to dress,"
Mary told her, not quite able to stop herself from glancing down at her small frame. Alice stared at her a minute. Then realization of what Mary meant clicked into place.
"Oh, no, I don't mean slutty. That's for costume parties and the like. I just mean attention-grabbing. The right combinations of colors and cuts to draw the eye, highlighting your own look just enough to make sure their gazes stay on you. In that case, less is more. Just trust me, Mary. When it comes to fashion, I've been a super for years." "You do always dress nicely,"
Mary acquiesced.
"Thank you,"
Alice said, turning her attention back to the closet.
"Your clothes aren't bad either. They're just a little eclectic. When you're in the woods, function tends to trump fashion relentlessly,"
Mary said.
"I wouldn't know. The closest we ever really came to roughing it in my family was staying at a hotel that had an indoor garden,"
Alice said.
"You should go sometime. The air, the smells, the quiet. It's a wholly unique experience,"
Mary told Alice, her eyes drifting off as she remembered her peaceful trailer in the forest.
"I might just do that over the summer,"
Alice said.
"Now that I can, it'd be nice to try." "Now that you can?" "Yeah. Now, post-procedure. I had to limit my time outdoors before,"
Alice said.
"Oh, because of the floating,"
Mary surmised.
"Bingo. When I was really happy, I floated. If there wasn't a ceiling to stop me, that meant a much longer fall to the ground. Being outside was basically taking my life in my hands,"
Alice explained.
"That seems awful,"
Mary said.
"So every time you had a rush of joy, it was soon followed by a plummet to the ground? How did you deal with that?"
"Mostly I stopped doing things that made me too happy,"
Alice replied.
"It wasn't hard in my house. The goal was just to maintain a constant neutral, never have any strong emotions burst through."
"You weren't very good at it,"
Mary said. Alice jerked her head up sharply and met Mary's eyes. Mary shook her head.
"I wasn't listening. I've just gotten to know you. You took to Lander so easily, accepted this new way of life with almost no problem besides hesitance and fear. Despite how hard you worked to be guarded throughout your life, you even made friends with a telepath. There's no way a girl like that was good at locking down her feelings all the time."
Alice said nothing at first, then placed a shirt on the bed.
"Let's try the purple top with the jeans I picked out earlier,"
Alice said.
"Sounds good,"
Mary agreed.
"If the look works, then we can finally get to the real fun."
"Real fun?"
Mary asked.
"Oh, yeah,"
Alice confirmed, with a gleeful glint in her eye.
"Shoes."
80. To say the music was loud would be an understatement of criminal magnitudes. The music here wasn't so much heard as it was felt, the bass quaking through one's bones and forcefully shaking one's brain. It was easily louder than the country western club they had gone to last semester. However, this one had evidently possessed a designer with a modicum of sense. The club was split up into several different rooms. There was a patio outside, several rooms for lounging, and one wherein dancing was expected. The dance room was where the music reached its tooth-chattering apex, but the others were habitable enough to allow some conversation. It was in one of the lounging rooms that the Lander students settled down to relax. The final tally had wound up being all of the Melbrook students, along with Jill, Will, and Alex. Sasha had been too sore from the day's class, and they'd had no luck reaching Thomas. They were still a sizable crowd, and as such grabbed hold of a large, circular booth where they could all sit comfortably.
"So, not to sound like the clubbing newbie here, but now what do we do?"
Mary asked, after they'd been relaxing in their booth for half an hour.
"Well, normally by this point, Roy would be drinking heavily, dancing on the floor, and trying to figure out which girl to bring home. I think that's pretty much the norm for club activities," Herschel said. "Right?"
"Let's hope not," Vince said. "We've all got marked hands and are underage, so drinking is out. Will and I are in relationships, so we can't chase girls with you, and all that leaves for us is dancing."
"Maybe later on that one," Herschel said.
He very much wanted to ask Mary, who was currently sipping cranberry juice through a straw on the other side of the booth, if she would care to dance. Wanting to, and having the courage to, were proving to be very different things, though. So, instead, he was pushing it off, convincing himself it would somehow grow easier as the night progressed.
"Hey, let's not give up on bringing girls home yet," Nick butted in. "Alex and I aren't taken. We can roam the club for young, impressionable women."
"I'm going to leave an impression in your skull," Alice threatened. "Regardless, if we keep sitting here, all we'll do is keep sitting. Mary, Jill, come with me. We're going to put ourselves near the dance floor and see how many boys come calling."
"Finally! Let's move,"
Jill said.
"Actually, I'm comfortable right here,"
Mary tried to object, but Alice took her by the shoulders and began marching her into the next room.
"Read my mind already," Alice urged her.
Mary had actually been tuning out thoughts tonight, the ambient sound of music uncomfortably reminding her of the days when she couldn't make the voices stop. Still, she reached into Alice's mind and listened. It seemed Alice was getting the girls away from the booth in order to force Herschel into making a move. Alice felt that if they stayed, he would dither all night and lose the opportunity. But if he was scared other boys were dancing with Mary, it might push him to action. By the time Mary had processed it all, they were in the crisp chill of the outdoor area and safely out of earshot from the table. Granted, even in the lounge room, 10 feet would put you easily out of earshot from someone.
"I think he would have asked me,"
Mary said, stopping the progression toward the dance room.
"He thinks so, too, and he would have kept thinking that until we had to leave and it wasn't done," Alice countered.
"Actually, I'm with Alice here," Jill chimed in. "Boys are cowards and morons for the most part. I love my brother, but do you know how he got that girlfriend of his?"
"How?"
Mary asked.
"She asked him out. Twice. Because the first time he didn't get that it was a date. You have to give them little pushes here and there, or you'll be waiting forever for them to make a freaking move," Jill told her.
"This is a little push? You're not making out with some dude in the bathroom. You're going with the other single girls to see if anyone will ask you to dance. This is pretty much as gently as we can remind him that other guys find you attractive, too," Alice assured her.
"I guess it can't hurt to go watch the people dancing," Mary caved.
"Atta girl. We'll have him eating out of your hand in no time."
"Is it me, or did this just turn into a total sausage fest? Nick asked, as the girls scampered away.
No, you're dead on, Alex agreed. That seemed odd, Herschel said. They just sort of all bolted away.